You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Why do you think less students are choosing to study at university?
Well, because being a student isn't sexy anymore.
The Wire.
The decision to halt classroom developments across the country has also met opposition from those working in the education sector, who say new developments are both urgent and necessary, including in the locations the government has chosen to put on hold. Additionally, the government has set aside $150 million for charter schools, which come with other controversies. Recently, the government announced changes to their charter school plans, which would give them access to the teaching resources given to public schools and prevent unions from collective bargaining with charter schools. I speak to the Post-Primary Teachers Association's Junior Vice President, Kieran Gainsford, about the allocation of education funding and the government's prioritisation of charter schools. We also speak further about charter schools, whether they work, and the issues with blocking collective bargaining. The government recently announced plans to put just over 100 classroom developments on hold. Is this a decision the government can afford to make, given overcrowding and other issues across the country?
Property, we know, is a real issue across many schools. It's not just confined to Auckland or the major centres. And we know that many of our students are learning in what are, quite frankly, inadequate learning conditions. And when we say inadequate, that might mean that those spaces are not suitable for the kind of specialist teaching that needs to happen, for example, science or technology. But inadequate might also mean that some spaces are not adequately weather tight, their temperature, their humidity, some of the health and safety issues in some of those learning spaces are poor, I think, to say the least. And so I think the government can't afford to simply put on hold the building of classrooms. We think that a value for money exercise is an admirable aim, but if that results in simply stopping school building projects that are needed for young people to be able to learn in schools, then that's something the government definitely can't afford to do.
How great is the need for urgent new classroom developments at the moment?
It's extremely urgent, and that's true especially in Auckland, but also elsewhere around the country. One of the reasons for that is we have a roll bulge going through secondary schools at the moment, sort of a mini baby boom, if you like, that's coming through secondary schools and pushing up enrolments, particularly in secondary schools. But also migration has had an impact. We know that the arrival figures have been high in New Zealand in recent years, and many of those families are arriving with secondary school-aged young people who need somewhere to go to school. So I can certainly, off the top of my head, think of a number of schools in Auckland who are having to come up with pretty ad hoc solutions, such as converting sections of their libraries or their staff rooms or even their halls to teaching spaces when ideally they'd be teaching their young people in classrooms. So it's certainly an urgent issue and one that's here with us now, not one that can be dealt with in a few years' time.
The government has set aside $150 million for charter schools and is pushing ahead with these plans. What kind of message is this giving to Aotearoa's public schools, which have just received this news about classroom developments?
Well, look, the state of our school property is a pretty glaring example of why charter schools are an unnecessary and, we think, pretty morally suspect project. The government should be using money put aside for charter schools to honour property projects that have reached the end of the design stage, at least, and build them for schools that need them, rather than forcing schools back into another design process. And, you know, as you've kind of suggested there, local state schools do desperately need more resources. So pouring $153 million taxpayer dollars into what's an ideological obsession that will simply allow some schools to not employ trained registered teachers is, you know, with very little to show for that spending and very little transparency or accountability, is a poor use of valuable taxpayer money at a time when our education system needs proper investment and proper support.
Moving on fully to charter schools, the government also recently announced changes to their charter school plans, allowing them to access public school teaching resources and preventing teachers at charter schools from negotiating multi-employer collective agreements. What do these changes represent in terms of the government's confidence in the charter school model?
Well, we think it shows that the government's well aware that there's plenty of world-class, excellent student support available in our state system. And so, in one way, it isn't surprising that they want charter schools to have access to this. But then it's another thing for the government to then turn around and say that state schools are underperforming and therefore we need to remove their requirement follow the curriculum or to employ trained and registered teachers in every classroom. So we think it sort of shows the ideological rather than evidence-based nature of the charter schools model, and the fact that teachers will be specifically targeted for a reduction in their collective bargaining rights is of particular concern. And one has to ask why the government, if the government is so confident that charter schools will result in improved learning conditions for students and employment conditions for teachers, why are they so determined to remove the right for unions, for groups of teachers through their unions to negotiate minimum standards through multi-employer collective agreements?
Yeah, I'd like to particularly focus on that stance towards multi-employer collective agreements there. Why might the government implement that change, and what could it mean for both employees and employers?
Well, the government says that they think more flexibility for schools to respond to the needs of their students will be the outcome of this. We know, however, that public schools in New Zealand already enjoy much more autonomy and independence, self-governing independence, than schools in other public school systems around the world. So the idea that this will introduce more flexibility is a bit of a red herring, given that schools are already self-governing and arrange themselves essentially how they like already. Essentially, what it boils down to, as far as we can tell, is that the Associate Minister doesn't like the fact that teachers tend to bargain collectively for their employment terms and conditions. He finds that ideologically challenging, and so he wants a mechanism by which government can remove that from the state education system. We think it's of particular concern because the government has agreed in good faith to collective agreements that are currently in place with teachers, and teachers are working in schools, planning their lives on the basis of the security that provides to them. And so one of the more concerning things in the bill is removing, specifically by statute, the ability for teachers to access things like redundancy provisions or employment protection that are otherwise guaranteed under employment law or the collective agreement. That's been explicitly removed in this version of the Education and Training Amendment Bill.
And you've talked about these risks to teachers under the charter school model or to those educating in the place of usually trained teachers. What are the risks to students who are, you know, attending these charter schools maybe in the future?
Well, one of the things the bill does is it removes the requirement for those unregistered, unpracticing certificated teachers in charter schools to be subject to the Teaching Council's competence procedures. We think those are a really valuable minimum safeguard to ensure that somebody working in front of a class of students is competent, has met a baseline standard of competence, and can be removed if they continually don't meet that standard of competence. Instead, what the government's proposing is simply throwing that responsibility entirely back on the charter school sponsor without any kind of particular oversight from the profession that the Teaching Council provides. So there's a real risk that classes of students may be stuck with people whose competence in ordinary circumstances will be called into question, but actually, given that some of these teachers will be exempt from those requirements, may in fact go under the radar. So there's a real concern for us that the minimum standards of quality teaching that we have in New Zealand may not be upheld in these charter schools, and students ultimately will be the ones who lose from that.
That was Junior Vice President of the Post-Primary Teachers Association, Kieran Gainsford, speaking to me about education funding and charter schools. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.